It's a half past the hour. It's a Transcendent Tuesday. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and part six today.
Yes, part six of Daniel.
Okay. So. Yeah, Sharon's with us too. So this will be an interesting... Sharon always has some really good questions, so brace yourself, Don.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, maybe I can anticipate some of them. I don't know, but we'll see.
And most of the time... Like 99.9% of the time, the answers are even better than the questions.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
That's the case here. Well, Daniel, we've been through adventures with Daniel so far, and I know Don is an Old Testament scholar in so many respects. He brings to us a depth of knowledge on Genesis, and I wasn't aware that he was so in love with the book of Daniel, but he's revealed to us just how densely packed this is with prophecy. And we've learned that from the beginning of Daniel, and now we're in chapter 6. And now Nebuchadnezzar and the whole Babylonian reign has been toppled over. And the Medo-Persian Empire is in charge, and they've appointed Darius to take charge of the city of Babylon, where Daniel is. And how are they getting along, Don, Darius and Daniel?
Well, Darius and Daniel are getting along just fine. It's the supposed wise men that are having a problem. You know, with Daniel is one of the exiles, and so he's kind of put in charge. But before we get there, let's talk about Darius. Who is Darius?
That's a good question. Yeah,
Cyrus. You know, or is he someone else?
I've got to admit, when I saw his name, because I opened to chapter 6, and I said, oh, that's Cyrus, isn't it? Isn't it like an alternate name for Cyrus? What's the case here?
Well, it's actually one of Cyrus's generals called Ugubaru. And it was Ugubaru who entered Babylon the night of Belteshazzar's feast.
You remember that from last week, yeah.
Who was actually, who took over kind of the kingdom of Babylon and ran his sword, if you will, through Belteshazzar, ending that particular reign of Babylon. And Belteshazzar, as we had mentioned last time, was King Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. It wasn't his son, but it was his grandson.
And how like life that is. The reigning monarch seemed to end disastrously with violence so often in those days, and I guess clear up until this time, too, in some parts of the world. But I don't want to confuse it with Belteshazzar. That's Daniel's name, but Belshazzar was the grandson, and he threw a big party for thousands of people. And I think, as we discussed last week, my thoughts were they knew the end was coming, because he was killed that very night after the party. I think that was kind of a eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow we die sort of thing. And that's exactly what happened. It happened to be that evening that the Persians overran the city after rechanneling the river, right?
Yes, exactly. And but, you know, God warned Belteshazzar that this was going to happen. And so he calls in his wise men, and they can't interpret the writing. They can't read it. And then finally, it's his grandmother, the wife of King Nebuchadnezzar, who says, you know, you better call Daniel to interpret this. He knows, and he probably can interpret it. Of course, Daniel comes in, interprets it, and says, basically, your days are numbered, and you've been found wanting, and your kingdom is going to be taken away from you. And indeed, that's exactly what happened shortly after that. And so Belshazzar, his reign ends, and... It was Ugbaru who actually entered, like I said, entered the kingdom through the water channel that goes into the city from the river. And so he entered apparently on October 12th, 539 BC. And then Cyrus doesn't come in until about 2 weeks later on October the 29th. And Cyrus then appoints Ugbaru the ruler of Babylon. So his general, if you will, is now the ruler of Babylon. And so how do we get Darius? Well, Darius is apparently a title. And not necessarily a name of a person.
Now, we should point out you're getting a lot of this information from extra-biblical sources, are you not?
That's correct, yes. It is not from the Bible itself, but, you know, other people have recorded a whole bunch of stuff. And Darius actually is an honorable title, meaning holder of the scepter. So I guess anybody who held the scepter could have been titled Darius. And indeed, there were this title was used for five other later Persian rulers. So we know that it was a title and not necessarily a name of a person. So that kind of brings us up to date. And Darius is in charge of the kingdom. And he sets 120 satraps. This is in Daniel chapter 1, I mean chapter 6, verse 1, throughout the kingdom and over these satraps, these magicians, the, you know, the wise men, the sorcerers, basically. Over these, he sets three high officials. And one of them is Daniel, and apparently he's the number one guy. So you have three over the 120, but Daniel is the number one guy. And these satraps don't really like it, this foreigner being over them, and how, you know, this doesn't seem right to them.
A satrap would be a minor level bureaucrat, maybe.
Or one of the wise men,
or, you know, or the judge.
You know,
or, okay.
Nebuchadnezzar had his wise men. The satraps were, you know, probably considered like them, and may have been either descendants or of the wise men from Nebuchadnezzar's time.
But kind of
leftover. Rulers, judges, you know, over the area, as so to speak. So anyway, here we have these in Chaldeans, you know, here we have these folks that are not too pleased that somehow Darius builds a relationship with Daniel relatively quickly, and it could have been because of the latter part of the previous chapter where Daniel shows Cyrus that his name is mentioned in Isaiah, which was written at least 150 years earlier. And so Cyrus is pretty impressed with that and already, you know, forms a relationship
with
him.
That's an important point, too.
Daniel is a friend of the king's.
You made that last week. Isaiah actually included Cyrus in a prophecy 150 years prior to this whole historical event. He was the prophet, of course, in Israel in the 8th century B.C. But he predicted this, and Daniel had a letter from Isaiah.
Well, it was Isaiah. It was the scroll.
It was the scroll itself. Okay.
It was the scroll of Isaiah that had mentioned Cyrus. And so Daniel just points him out to him that, you know, Cyrus is going to, that God called him out by name, especially.
We knew you were coming.
Yeah, he knew you were coming, and your timing is impeccable because it's you're right on time, so to speak. And so that then, you know, begins this whole episode, which we'll get into in later chapters of Daniel, of Israel's time is coming to an end in Babylon. And so that's the next chapter. We'll talk about that. But anyway, in this chapter, you know, Daniel, these guys, these satraps, kind of come up with a plan. They say, hey, look, let's find something, any fault or complaint against Daniel that we can get him into trouble. And so they look at Daniel, they look at his life, and they find no fault or no error in mm-hmm. him. And, you know, this guy is like, he's a perfect guy. I mean, he doesn't do anything wrong. You know, he doesn't steal. He doesn't lie. He doesn't do the usual things that normal people apparently in that day, in our day, do. He was found faultless. And so they finally say, okay, look, the only complaint we're going to get against him is we got to connect him with his God. And if we connect a law, connecting him, a law to his God, then we can trap him. So that's exactly what they do. And they come up with this decree that says for the next 30 days, excuse me, anyone found worshiping someone else other than the king, King Darius, will, you know, throw him in the lion's den because this is defaming the king and not representing the king as kind of the god over the mm-hmm. over the region. Now, so they go into Darius and they say, "Oh, King Darius, live forever." and so they come with this decree. Darius is tricked. He, because they come in representing all of the satraps, of which Daniel was the leader, and Daniel clearly didn't agree to this, but the king didn't know that, and so he signs this decree that anybody who worships another, anybody else but the king for these 30 days will be thrown into the lion's den. And unlike the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar, where King Nebuchadnezzar had ultimate authority, whether he signed an edict or not, didn't matter. He could change it at will. The Medes and the Persians had a different kind of rule of law, if you will, that once a edict was signed, it could not be changed.
You might call it an executive order.
I was thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like an executive and order with ultimate power.
It foreshadows the Roman Empire when the divinity of the emperor was established and Christians were persecuted for not bowing to the emperor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, exactly. So this goes back a long ways, you mm-hmm. know, this idea that the emperor is God or the king is God. And so... unfortunately, Darius falls for it, and they establish the decree. He signs it into law, and interestingly enough, verse 10 in Daniel, I mean, Daniel knew about the document, mm-hmm. and right after signing, Daniel goes about his normal routine, which is three times a day he goes up in his upper chamber with mm-hmm. the windows open and worship the God of Abraham. Well, you know, he worships his God, and but his window, he could have done it with the window closed, but as usual, his window is open, which, of course, the satraps knew. And so he gets trapped. Daniel knew he wasn't, you know, he wasn't trapped. He did it on purpose because this was his normal routine and he wasn't going to change his routine. And they find him, you know, worshiping this other god. They catch him in the act, so to speak. And so they bring him to Darius. So they, you know, say, you know, Darius is disturbed now because Darius really likes Daniel. I mean, he's a likable guy. He's humble. There is a spirit, a godly spirit about him, which the leaders recognize And hence was why he was put in charge of the satraps in the first place, and put in charge of the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar as well. And so Darius is very troubled by them, the satraps, bringing Daniel to him. And so he tries to devise a plan where he can get out of this. Is there any way that I can get out of this decree from my buddy Daniel? And the satraps remind him, oh, king, you can't change anything. You know, what was written is written. And so, you know, the king says, okay, you know, throw Daniel in the lion's den. But the king is still highly disturbed. And matter of fact, he's so disturbed that he does not sleep that night and prays that Daniel would be saved. And isn't that interesting that the king is praying and, you know, wants the God of Daniel to deliver him? And so he prays all night, and in early he gets up right when the sun is coming up, rushes to the lion's den, which a big stone had been rolled across it so nobody could escape. The nobody was Daniel or the lions. And you know, the evening before, if you will, the king declared to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And so he comes rushing in and asking, he has the stone, you know, rolled away. He comes and said, oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? So he doesn't know whether, you know, anybody's going to respond, because normally you throw somebody in the lion's den, they get eaten up immediately. And Darius is, you know, pleasantly surprised when Daniel says to the king, oh, king, live forever. My God sent his angels and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. I have done no harm. Now, if you recall a couple of chapters back, chapter 2, we had the fiery furnace, and Meshach and Shadrach and Abednego were thrown into the fiery furnace that was, you know, set 7 times hotter than usual. And they, too, were found blameless, not only in themselves, but before the king. And so God is rescuing his blameless people, if you will. this gives us a clue to something that is yet to take place in the future. If we saw that the young the young 3 boys, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, went through the fiery furnace but were not harmed, we kind of pointed to that and said, well, maybe that is a prophecy that Israel will go through the fiery furnace, the 7-year fiery furnace, which is called the tribulation period. And indeed, that will be the case. And here, Daniel goes through the trial of the lions, and he too is saved through that. And so we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. So the king was exceedingly glad, and commanded that Daniel be taken out. Okay, all is good. Daniel's taken out. But now the king says, okay, bring the leaders that wrote this decree, essentially, bring them here and throw them in the lion's den, and not only throw them, but throw their children and their wives.
That seems to be a pattern. The whole family goes when the king is ticked.
Yes, exactly. So they get thrown into the lion's den, and immediately the lions tear them apart and break their bones, as is described here, and you know, in this chapter. So the opposition to Daniel is destroyed, which, you know, brings to mind, you know, the verse, vengeance is mine, says the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So the enemy of God's people need to fear God, because he will bring vengeance in some form or another. And that's exactly what he does here. And the king, much like Nebuchadnezzar, actually, sends out a decree and says, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear God, fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. And so this is kind of similar to what King Nebuchadnezzar did,
mm-hmm.
right? And he sends out a decree, especially after he loses his mind for that period of time, the 7-year period, when he actually loses his mind. Finally, his mind comes back to him, and he says, okay, it's not me.
Nebuchadnezzar.
It's interesting that Darius falls for the same thing. It's, you know, the king was fooled because of his pride. Because, yeah, I'd like my kingdom to bow down to me and to only me. But he didn't realize that Daniel wasn't going to do that, not out of disrespect, but he couldn't because out of mm-hmm. his love for his God and his honor of the God of all gods, of course, that Daniel was acting. But like Nebuchadnezzar, Darius is indeed humbled and sends out this decree to all the people. So, you know, we got leaders of the Babylonians who are sending out decrees that, look, folks, Daniel's God is God.
Now, so, I'm going to try to short circuit you here a little bit, because with the fiery furnace, there was a fourth figure.
There was.
And we decided, we may have recognized that was Jesus. That was the Christ, prefiguring his eventual coming. Now, in this case, with the lion's den, Daniel says God sent his angel, singular.
Yes.
Could that have been Jesus?
So who was that?
Could that have been Jesus?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who was that. Again, a Christophany. Was that Jesus himself saving Daniel? Or was it just, you know, one of the messengers, one of the angels mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. God sent? We don't know. I mean, you know, we can't see the angel glowing or anything, only
so
Daniel.
So the fiery furnace was prophetic in terms of the 7.5 years that were going to come out after that. How was the lion's den prophetic?
Okay, so it foreshadows the man of sin. Of course, the man of perdition, the man of sin is the Antichrist, claiming divine honors under the penalty of death. So this is, you know, this decree is kind of similar to, as we said, King Nebuchadnezzar's
mm-hmm.
Building of his statue of himself. But in essence, the personage behind all of this is Satan himself. And of course, the man of perdition, man of sin, will come and sacrifice a pig in the altar at the in the temple and declare himself to be God. And so we have kind of a parallel here. And anybody who does not bow to this figure or to the image of the beast is under the penalty of death. And, you know, it's Revelation 7 and 12.
Okay, so history may not repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes.
Yes. Hmm. Now, it's interesting that the devil himself, the Bible states that he goes around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So in 1 Peter 5:8, for example, 2 Timothy 4, and Revelation 13, there's some of the references there that he goes about. And so, and also Daniel did not receive the mark of the beast. He was not injured. He wasn't scratched. He wasn't, you know, nothing from the lions. He came out perfect, just like Meshach, Shadrach, and the Abednego. They came out unscathed by the fiery fire. Daniel comes out unmarked, unharmed. So, you know, we could kind of relate this to the 144,000 in Revelation chapter 7 and 14.
The remnant.
Where the 144,000 are sealed. And are not harmed.
Interesting. And we're still not through the book of Daniel. There'll be more.
Oh, there'll be more. We'll see how far we go.
A huge part of it, just so packed with the prophetic meaning. It's just fascinating to hear that recounted. Yeah.
And reassurance that God will protect his own.
Indeed.
He does protect. Yes, absolutely.
Don Clark, a member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. You might be well advised to pay them a visit, especially if you're interested in the biblical story of creation, because there you will find scientific information that supports and explains and teaches that in a scientific manner. creationmoments.com. It's highly recommended. You can link to it from our podcast page on brokenroadradio.com. Don, we'll look forward to next week.
All right, very good.
Tremendous work here. Yeah, you too.
You bye-bye.
All right, so long.